Welcome to Local Energy Rules, a podcast about people putting together great community renewable energy projects and examining how energy policies help or hurt the development of clean local power. My name is Wade Underwood. John Farrell and I had the chance to speak with Steve Johnson, Vice President of Business Development at Convergence Energy. Steve helped to develop a solar farm north of Delavan, Wisconsin, on what was once a bean field. We talked to Steve about the 660-kilowatt facility and how it provides a great off-site location for individuals interested in investing in solar. Here's John and Steve now.
Welcome to the program, Steve.
Thanks, John. Glad to be here.
Well, let's start off, and maybe you can describe a little bit about the project and how it all got started.
The project that we built in Delavan, Wisconsin, which is about an hour and 30 minutes northwest of Chicago, came about as we were developers in the southeastern Wisconsin area. We had many locations that for one reason or another were not able to put solar on their home or their business, and thus were looking for an alternative to place solar for those individuals and entities that wanted to participate in solar energy but couldn't. It might have been that their home was in the woods and blocked by trees, their roof, or that they had the facing of their roof was in the wrong direction, or they had an airplane hangar at an airport that they couldn't put solar on. And so thus, that was the genesis of the project from the beginning, was to try and provide an off-site location for individuals interested in investing in solar to have a place to do that.
I see that the owner there, Mr. Olson, had solar on his own barn previous to that. Is that partly why it ended up at that location?
Yeah, we had done a project for Dan Osborne, who is the owner of a commercial nursery and farm in Delavan, and had done, you know, two projects for him on pole barns, roofs, and all of this came up, and he said, well, I have, you know, this 14-acre bean field sitting here that's fairly flat, and perhaps, you know, we could figure out a way to put solar out here. That's how the project, you know, started. So from there, it went from an idea to actually sitting down and financially engineering the project, and then, you know, how you go about it through code and, you know, getting the proper permitting and working with the local utility to make sure that all, you know, all sides of the equation were being met.
I see in the story that was in the Walworth County newspaper a year or two ago about this project that you had to set up, I think it was 33 separate limited liability companies for the project. Could you talk a little bit more about why that was the structure you had to choose and how that helped people invest?
Sure. Based on, you know, the project itself is set up, it's a 660 kilowatt facility, and it had to be broken down into 20 kilowatt increments, thus the 33 separate LLCs. That was done primarily because the net metering policies with the utility require that if you're going to sell the energy back to them at retail, the system can't be any larger than 20 kW. So we sized each system for 20 kilowatt DC, and thus we're able to net meter back to the utility at retail.
You know, I'm curious about that because I know with net metering, a lot of times there are you need to be offsetting some on-site load. So is Dan Osborne able to do that? Is that the way that it's working, or is there some other sort of arrangement for how the power is purchased?
Well, in the case of, you know, this utility, there's not, you know, there doesn't have to be an offsetting load under the current tariffs and direction by the PSC or Public Service Commission. It does have a slight load because each of the systems on the farm is a dual-axis tracker, so there is a load, although minimal. But it doesn't, they don't, you know, underneath the tariffs and the guidelines, there was no minimum requirement for net metering. I mean, there's a lot of rate cases out there now where they want to tie it to a particular load, and that the systems can't be larger than the producing more than 20% of the actual load. But that wasn't the case as we started this project.
Sure.
Steve, can you tell us if any state incentives were used for this particular project?
Yes, at the time there was a ratepayer funded incentive in Wisconsin, and it still exists today, although not funded as robustly as it was, called Focus on Energy, with their mission to enable solar, distributed generation solar projects to proliferate in Wisconsin. So we did take advantage of the grants that were provided and the guidelines given for those types of projects.
What other kinds of incentives, or actually I guess I had two questions. One is, well, what was the Focus on Energy incentive at the time? And I assume there was also the use of the federal incentives. Was there anything else in terms of putting the project financially together?
Yeah, the three incentive, the three categories incentives were obviously the state. At the time when we built the facility, we also had the Treasury grant, the 1603 federal Treasury grant. And then, of course, because these are all commercial limited liability companies, LLCs, there was, depreciation schedules involved. And at the time, I believe it was, bonus depreciation, which allowed you to write off the asset fairly rapidly. So we had, both state and federal incentives, grants to offset the cost of the project.
Now, when investors sort of jumped into this project in the story in this county newspaper, they talked about folks put in anywhere from like $15,000 to $50,000, but that'll pay back in 7 to 10 years. But also in terms of the agreement that investors signed up for, the solar panels will revert back to Convergence Energy ownership after a set period of time. Could you explain a little bit more about how that works?
Yeah, sure. The way it was set up that, when you combine all of the incentives and, investment tax credits or rather depreciation, the costs of the system were covered by the investor and those grants and the installation of the system as well. And investors would either come in for an 11 or a 20-year investment term, depending on, which one they wanted to participate in. And their returns would, be in the 8 to 10% range, so that it became fairly attractive to do that. So since the project was based on a term and based on a projected rate of return, which takes into consideration electricity inflation over time, it reverts back at the end of that term to the holding company or to the other participant in each of the LLCs. And that's really where Convergence makes its money on the back end. So really it's built for the investors now, and in the future, those ownership reverts back.
So Convergence will continue to operate the solar arrays then for as long as they have useful life?
That is correct. We have a 25-year lease on the property, on the Osborne property there, and with options to extend it.
Now, one other thing I was interested in terms of how you managed to set up the investment for folks, because it's an issue that other community solar projects have run into, is were there any issues with securities regulation? I know sometimes when people are putting together these projects, maybe setting up an LLC or trying a different arrangement, there can be limitations with either federal or state securities laws about how you solicit this investment to people and kind of what kind of investors are allowed to participate. Did you have any issues with that?
Yeah, it's the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, does regulate these types of investments, and there's a variety of different ways you can approach them. And, we chose a path that provided us, we were not able to, go out there and advertise this investment. And it's really, folks we knew or had relationships with that, through our, general work and, family friends network, that we're able to come on board with as an investor in one of the LLCs.
So
there were not any state regulations. It was all federal SEC.
Okay.
And so it's not an inexpensive project because of, you know, the documentation that has to be provided. And each of the investors has to be an accredited investor, which means they either have to have a certain level of holdings and or a certain level of income for a period of time, and thus that would make them an accredited investor or a savvy, you know, well-educated investor for these types of investments, which, of course, are risky.
You kind of mentioned that there's the possibility of extending the project that's on the Osborne property. Are there plans to do that?
Well, this project is on the Osborne property is as big as it's going to be. We can't put physically, there's space, obviously, but in order for you to put additional systems up, it would require infrastructure enhancements, larger lines to connect to the grid. We've maxed out the power that can go on the current grid. So there won't be any additional systems on that side because we were not willing to invest in that infrastructure upgrades. It just wouldn't work financially.
Any plans to do additional projects, though, in other locations in Wisconsin or elsewhere in the upper Midwest?
Well, because it was, you know, basically there was a fair amount of incentives involved in it. If you don't have cash grants and incentives, then you need to find entities that have a significant tax appetite to utilize what is, you know, the 1603 Treasury grant reverted back to the investment tax credit or the ITC. So there's still 30%. ITC available from the federal government, but that requires a pretty significant level of income to offset that investment tax credit. As there are the state incentives for projects of this size have are currently not available in Wisconsin. We're not pursuing any additional farms or developments of this type in Wisconsin. We probably receive somewhere between 5 and 10 inquiries a month from different locations around the country. And, you know, we could pursue, we haven't right now, putting these types of farms up at other locations. It's just mainly because of that, you know, if you don't have a grant, again, you have to find somebody that has a pretty significant tax appetite. So, you know, this, and on the other side of it is, you know, as the cost of equipment continues to drop, you know, and the economics might work again. But currently, under the current situation, we don't have any direct plans right now to build additional farms under this type of model. We are working on other projects, but not specifically as we set this one up. We had originally thought we would, but not right now.
Is it a model that you see being used elsewhere in the country? I think in the story about your project, it was said that it was sort of a model after something being done in Colorado. Do you see that being used in Colorado still?
Well, Colorado passed legislation. It was after we had already, you know, had our project underway. They have a, you know, what they call solar garden, and that's, you know, that's a little bit different than this in that someone, an entity, perhaps it would be a co-op or a utility, and it could be a private investor, could put up a facility within the trading area of a utility or a co-op, and in conjunction with them, use that farm to put solar panels on that would then offset their, you know, those folks who invested, it would offset their utility bill directly. So it's really kind of a virtual net metering project or legislation that they have there. And there's a few of those going on. We had bid on one, and, you know, we didn't ultimately get the project. A local company out there did. So I haven't followed it any more than that. But, you know, it's that type of legislation where, because you do have a lot of individuals and entities that, again, for all the reasons that we know, whether they're, you know, if it's a residential situation and they're in a condominium or an apartment building and, you know, they have no way to put solar on, that these types of opportunities like ours or like what they're doing with solar gardens in Colorado, gives people an opportunity to invest in that and participate in renewable green energy production. I believe, you know, there was also another, there was a piece of legislation in California that was very similar, but I don't think it was, in fact, I know it wasn't signed into law as of, you know, at least 30 days ago, but it was put forth, and I'm not sure where that nets out. You'd have to do some research on that, but I know that they were considering similar legislation in California.
Yeah, you're right. I actually wrote up a little bit about virtual net metering, and the I think there are 8 states now, if I'm not mistaken, coming up with it off the top of my head, that now offer virtual net metering in one form or another, whether it's to certain particular customer classes or more broadly. But it certainly is a policy we hope to see more of for community solar. I don't think either Wade or I have other questions for you, but is there anything else you think we should know about this project or the prospects for community solar?
Well, I think that, you know, when we started, it was, you know, a great idea. I think it remains that way. We had to get very, very creative in, you know, putting this project together, which, you know, had there been, you know, perhaps a national energy policy that would, you know, level the playing fields across the country that would allow these types of developments and concepts to, you know, flourish would be really great. Because, you know, obviously that's a our model is a very, very complicated and onerous on everyone process, you know, through regulation and everything else. So, you know, if we had national energy policies that would allow these types of developments to happen, it would certainly proliferate these types of ideas. So, you know, we had a great time doing it. We, you know, our investors are happy with what we've done, and, you know, we would hope that, you know, that these types of opportunities would keep coming in the future, and we're certainly going to be there keeping track and watching things closely so that we can provide these types of opportunities for others.
Well, thanks so much for being with us, Steve. We really appreciate your perspective on community solar and for you to tell the story about the project you managed to put together.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me today.
That was John Farrell, Wade Underwood, and Steve Johnson. Steve is the Vice President of Business Development at Convergence Energy, where he helped put together the solar farm outside of Delavan, Wisconsin. Steve and Convergence Energy are keeping their eyes open for opportunities where the success from this solar farm might be replicated. For questions or comments, please email jfarrell@ilsr.org with Local Energy Rules Podcast in the subject. John's Twitter handle is John F. Farrell. This podcast was published on February 21st, 2013. Thanks for tuning in.